We were on holidays in the States, and because I was pregnant, it was only diagnosed when I came back from a holiday in the States, where I came back on the floor of the plane. And Sean was 23, I was 24. I wasn't told, Sean was told. And I suppose as a newly married couple, that was the first awful shock, where you think everything's going to go right. Mm. And then came a few weeks, he was told in Vincent's that they keep the baby alive until it was viable. I was 3 months pregnant, but there was no hope at all for me, and that was in July 1977. And then we went on, and unfortunately I got toxemia. Now they reminded me very well in Vincent's, but I got toxemia in early November, and went back to Holly Street for a checkup that I was also attending for the pregnancy end of things, and was told in no uncertain terms that the baby was dead. And the next awful thing was the birth of that baby. That was like, I went into labour. I was in labour for hours and hours. And knowing that there was going to be nothing at the end. And anyone who's ever delivered a child will know that when delivery comes, your hormones are all over the place. And I just had no bundle. We had no bundle coming home. Now, after that, they said I'd be dead by Christmas. But that was in November. And by Christmas, my appendix burst, then just before Christmas, as loads of things happen when you have leukemia, because your immune system is very low. So I had my appendix burst, and they said, this will polish her off now. But it didn't. And I actually got back to school in January. I'm a primary teacher. And then in June of that year, I got double pneumonia, which was supposed to polish me off altogether, because I thought double pneumonia was pneumonia that was twice as bad. It's not. It's when your two lungs are infected. But I was, there were very low times, but I got through that. I was back to school, I went again. And then my health started to improve. Now, I was still having chemotherapy all the time. And I had been told at that stage, because I had to have radium treatment, and so I was going over to have radium. They kept me in. They sent me to Norfolk Road for radium treatment. And then, of course, I lost all my hair. And that only happened very gradually. Well, first of all, I'd lost clumps of it through chemotherapy. And just when it was growing back, they told me, you're going to lose every single blade on your head with the radium treatment. And that was another thing I had to cope with, I suppose. And then I got through that, and I was still alive. And what happened after that? Then we had a good few years when they were to bring me back every week for yonks, for blood tests. And my blood was staying reasonably, or sometimes it'd be up, sometimes down a bit, but it was staying reasonably okay. So then we decided we'd ask, what about having another baby? So we went out to Vincent's together, just took a morning off, both of us. And we're told that because I'd had just under 4 years of chemotherapy and radium treatment, you won't be having any more babies. You're now infertile, probably, says your man. But you never heard of anyone who wasn't. And that was another huge shock, I suppose. And it took us a while to get over that. And eventually you just learn to accept it. What can you do? And then I had a wonderful, I was in Kilnamanna Church, not in Lourdes or anywhere where people go for cures. And I had an extraordinary experience. That's why I wrote the book, I think, because I did have an extraordinary experience after receiving the Eucharist, just at an ordinary 10 o'clock mass in my own parish church in Kilnamanna, in Tala. And I just knew that they were all wrong and that we were going to have more babies. And nobody believed me. I floated home from that church and nobody would listen to me. Nobody believed me. Everyone indulged me and let me talk on. But a few months later, I was pregnant. And the doctors in Vincent's thought I was absolutely mad. And I said, sure, why would we have taken precautions? Is everywhere going to have any? Like, that's stupid anyway. So they said, you're not going to survive this. Your immune system, after all our trouble, like, your immune system is going to ditch again, and you won't carry this baby to full term, and you'll die, is what I was told. And I said, don't be ridiculous. I have heard, I'm stronger authority than you. I know this is going to be successful. I just know it.
And you proved them wrong. And now you have how many children?
We now have three children, aged 27, 26 and 21.
And a granddaughter.
And a little granddaughter. And like there were loads of other blips along the way. Oh yeah, then after that, only a few years ago, I started to lose my balance. And my eyesight wasn't great. And eventually I was diagnosed with a brain tumour. So here I was, back in Beaumont this time, rather than Vince's, for a change. And I had, they said that it was a very large tumour that was probably there growing for years. But that they thought it was benign, but they wouldn't be sure until they operated. So I had a nine-hour operation for brain surgery. And luckily came out of that as well. And I had a hysterectomy. 2 years after that, because I had loads of fibroids, which a lot of women have in their 50s anyway. And then I was told that my womb is cancerous. But to date, that's all that happened to me.
Well, that wasn't bad, was it? So, Mary, what on earth kept you going throughout all that?
Well, you see, from my late teens, very early 20s, I got involved in Charismatic Renewal. And so, no, I loved the music and the praise and the prayer and all the rest and all the sharings at the, see, when you never had that at Mass. You never had lay people standing up sharing their lives. I thought this is wonderful. Really, people stand up and telling you what went right in their lives and what happened. And I used to love this sort of thing. And I just thrived on it. And I think God, in his own way, was preparing me for all that was going to happen. So he was trying to draw me near. And I suppose at that stage I started to pray a little bit. That wasn't conventional. I started to read the Bible and I started to meditate a little bit. But not a whole lot now. I wasn't killing myself or anything. And I think when I got very sick then, you see, the day is so long in hospital that you have so much time to yourself. And at the beginning I was so sick that I couldn't pray at all. But all I could do was lie there and say, Jesus, you have to help me. And I think the way he did help me was people came in, wonderful people came in and talked with me and prayed with me. And I was anointed four or five times and gave me huge support. And I kind of could see Jesus in all of this. I could kind of see, you know, that he was walking the road with me, I think, you know. I didn't hear any voices. Nothing extraordinary happened. I never had an experience like I had in Kilimanjaro Church ever again. But I don't need it. Because I know now that there is a God and that he's a loving God. And as well as that, I always liked scribbling and writing bits of poems and this sort of thing. So if anyone sent in a lovely card, sometimes you'd get great consolation even. That was Jesus talking to me. From that card someone sent in, where there was a poem on it or something. And sometimes I wrote little poems myself, and I journaled a lot. I did all those sorts of things. But my relationship with Jesus now, I started then, I just got kind of deeper and deeper, and now he's a trusted friend who, he never said it was going to be easy, never ever said that life was going to be easy. What he did say was that he'd be there all the time, until the end of time, he'd be there every minute of every day. And he has been. And I have my special, I call it my special time. It's kind of a prayer time, I suppose, every day now, where I just withdraw from everything, try and get every positive and negative thought out of my head and leave room for Jesus to teach me.